and iTunes International. Virus free.
Around the world and down your street. Rachel Branston.
This is Bondi Tunes International broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by our correspondent who's moved around this country so much I can hardly keep up, but I do believe she's in the ACT, the Australian Capital Territory, and joins me from Canberra, Rachel Branston. How you doing?
Living the dream in the beautiful capital where it's always in winter freezing cold, which you know I enjoy.
Yeah, and you know it's interesting that I've just talked with I've got an adult, what do they call it, a senior's moment. Peter Herman, who's also in Canberra, so that's funny. How is Canberra treating you?
Quite well. You know, it's funny, because I left Melbourne when I did, and we were sort of getting over that whole terrible COVID situation that we had to live through. It was funny to leave Melbourne because I didn't realise how stressed and sad and depressed and miserable everybody was until I got to Canberra. And it's a different kind of place. It's the people are very much like the people in Adelaide, and that's where I was born and bred, as you know. And it's very much like a very large country town, because we are basically regional New South Wales, so you know it's everybody's super friendly and you have a chat, and for the first couple of months it was a bit weird because I didn't have work to do, so I was just sort of, you know, plopping around by myself because Rob's, you know, away because he works away all the time, and so I was on my own a lot, and I don't know anybody here, but I probably talked a little bit too long at the checkout to the lady at Coles. But you know, it was a little bit uncomfortable for her, I think.
It's interesting you talk about the fact that you moved from Melbourne to Canberra, and how people really, you know, you come from a place where you're heavily restricted. Then you go to a place where people are going, ah, yeah, whatever.
Well, that's the thing.
It's a psychological thing, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, and it was funny because my first thing that I noticed the most, because we were still under very hard restrictions in Melbourne when I left. It was still mandatory mask wearing and all that sort of gear. So when I was wandering around Canberra without a mask on, I was sure the police were going to jump out and get me because I'd been conditioned
It's a terrible thing. You know, we've got a new correspondent in Melbourne, Melissa, and she came to Sydney, and I actually met up with her for the first time in, I don't know, last time I saw her was in Thailand, and she comes on the show regularly. Anyway, she came to Sydney and we met up, and she said exactly the same thing. She said she couldn't understand why people in Sydney are walking around with no masks, and she was thinking that she was going to get arrested, you know?
That's the thing, and you do. You've been so conditioned to do these certain things which are, you know, by law required of you, that if the minute you stop doing them, you think, oh my gosh, your instinct is that you're going to get in trouble, and so you sort of, you know, wary of it all. But it's funny because in Canberra, we haven't had a case of COVID in 10 months. And I mean, everybody listening overseas, I apologize for rubbing that in, I don't mean to, but but it's, you know, it's true, that's actually not entirely true, we haven't had community transmission. The only cases that have been in Canberra have been isolated in hotel quarantine, and they haven't had any effect on the general public.
But do you think they've done, I know Canberra's notably smaller than Melbourne, so that's something to take into account, but do you think that they've done anything differently than in Victoria?
I don't think so. I think it's just the fact that any regional part of Australia is going to be unaffected by the depth of how horrid this spreads, because they haven't got the traffic. They haven't got the quarantine that can go horribly wrong. They haven't got as many people. They haven't got people who have been in other cities coming to see them. And, you know, they had their restrictions at the beginning of COVID for us, like everybody else did. But when they came out of that first, when we came out of that first lockdown that our Prime Minister gave us, they didn't go back ever. It's just weird.
I was just going to ask you, we talked about this last time. The first place that you came onto our radio show was 10 years or plus show, years ago, and you were in a place called Caloundra in Queensland. Then you went and lived in a very strange town near Darwin, or as you used to call it, Darwin. It was in Darwin, but what was the name of the actual suburb? Because
it was Bellamac. And
oh, it was Bellamac.
But it's. I was actually in the spooky noodle town of Gladstone prior to Darwin.
Oh, yes. I've been to Happyston.
Yes, it's a very, very strange place. And the people there are all very odd, but not as odd as they are in the Northern Territory. But, yeah, I lived in Bellamac, which is next to a place where your phone pings from, is a place called Humpty Doo.
That's what I'm talking about. Humpty Doo.
Yes. So do you remember back in the old days when Facebook, you'd post on Facebook and it would tell everybody where you were if you had your location services on? It'd say Rachel's at Humpty Doo.
That's why I thought that. Okay.
Yes, that's right.
And then you left Darwin and went to Melbourne.
Did go to Melbourne, went back to Melbourne because I've lived in Melbourne before.
Of course.
And that was where I wanted to go. Rob and I made a deal that if I tolerated Darwin, I could choose our next place. And I've wanted to get back to Melbourne for years.
Of course you would. You're an actor and Melbourne is full of theatre, is the theatre capital, I would proffer, in Australia. And now you've moved to Canberra. So you have broadcast on our show from four different places around Australia.
I know, in only 10 years, which is pretty frightening. But it was necessary. Rob's work was such that he was moving around a lot and I wasn't tied down with a job at the time. So I just sort of followed on. And then when I made a decision that we were leaving, he made the decision we were leaving because he was offered a different job in Western Australia. I said, well, I'm not going to be based here while you do that. So I'll be based in Melbourne while you do that. And that's how we came to that. And then, of course, COVID and the whole disaster of him not being able to come home and all that sort of stuff. That's how we ended up here.
And Melbourne, of course, lifted a lot of restrictions. I'm not sure the state of that state right now. Do you have any regrets leaving Melbourne at a time when you felt you had to because of the whole situation between the states and your husband not being able to, you know, get back into Victoria? And there was that story of where someone said, oh yeah, come through, and please quickly tell us that story again.
Oh gosh, well yes, see, that's the thing, that everybody closed their borders to Victoria, and rightly so. And so he could come home any time he chose, but he couldn't return. So he couldn't have gone back to work, but he drove when he got to this job here in the near Canberra. Well, not near Canberra, but you know what I mean. When he got that job, the first thing he did was he said, "I'm going to come see you." And he got in his car. He got paperwork from his employer saying that he had a permit to cross the border, and he drove the 7 odd hours it takes to get to the Victorian border, and they said, you can come in, but this paperwork doesn't allow you to come back. And they said, the police said to him, you could just sneak across and take your chances, but we don't really think that'd be a great idea. But because he did it when it was very, very cold, it was about sort of, you know, a little bit on. It was about August, I think. And then he said, I don't think I'm that sort of person, and just sort of turn around and drive away. But he said when they were pulled up to them, they'd lit a fire on the side of the road, and we're all standing around it because it was so cold.
My God! And most of our listeners are in Europe and North America, and they're going to go, "You don't know what cold is."
We don't. That's true.
But it was cold. So what intrigues me is that the cops were actually saying something they shouldn't have been saying, Rachel.
Oh, 100% they shouldn't have. I mean, they weren't, you know, all respect to the New South Wales and Victorian police force, they weren't encouraging him to break the rules, but they said, look, you can, we'll let you cross, and if you want, you can do your best to get back, but you probably won't succeed, but you can give it a try if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, they were being honest with him.
They were.
And it was a question of playing some form of Russian roulette, wasn't it?
It really was. And, you know, it was a gamble that a lot of people took, and a lot of people got caught and got in trouble for. But not only that, I mean, you know me, I'm all about law and order and the rules and whatnot. If the rules are that you're not supposed to do a certain thing, don't do it. It's real simple.
Totally agree.
Because what you're doing is jeopardising the safety of everybody else. So, you know, it's just
You and Adam, our correspondent in Melbourne, you know, have always, I mean, especially when, you know, Victoria was in dire straits by comparison to the rest of Australia, not the world, you always stuck with that line, especially with the Premier of Victoria. What the hell is his name?
Daniel
Andrews. You see, he's out of the media for a month and a half and I've forgotten his name.
Well, that's the thing. He's had a very bad accident. Yes, he's recovering and he's right out of it.
He was supposed to be back today or yesterday, Monday, as we record, but it's been delayed.
It's six more weeks.
6 more weeks.
Mm-hmm. He very badly hurt himself. It was a very bad accident. And it was an accident that happened in his home. He wasn't even, you know, being a tearaway and sort of riding a dirt bike or anything like that. He just
he fell down the stairs
in his own home. Yeah, that was all that happened. And of course, people who aren't great big fans of him said it was all karmic and all this sort of rubbish. But you know, I don't care who you are. You don't.
Why are people so nasty? Why are people so nasty?
I know.
I just want to get back to your life in Canberra because, you know, I've travelled and lived in places like Israel, France, Holland, Australia, Britain, and I lived and worked in these countries, and I found that I got very lonely when I came to Australia back in 1989 because there was no internet, and a phone call back to my friends in London would have cost an absolute fortune. You just couldn't afford to do it. Mm. What I want to ask you about Canberra, and I've been to Canberra quite a few times. Did you after Melbourne? And let's just not talk about the COVID for a second. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about society here. Melbourne is, as I was saying earlier on, is the centre of entertainment. You are our entertainment reporter, and I want to ask you about entertainment in a minute. Mm-hmm. But when you went to Canberra, and also your husband, Robbie, was not actually there.
No.
Have you found friends in Canberra?
No.
Because you were locked down in your new place for 2 weeks, I think, when you arrived there.
I was, and then when I got let out, it was no different. The only difference was that I could actually leave the room, but I didn't. I just sort of wandered around. It's okay because I live where I live. It's like a 3-minute walk to a giant shopping mall, like a Westfield Plaza. So I just sit, and I hate those, but you go into them and. Because there's nobody lives here, because there's about 4 people who live in Canberra.
And they're probably all politicians.
That's right. You can walk into these places, and even on a Saturday afternoon, you can swing around and do the Sound of Music like you're on the Alps, and you're not going to hear a soul. It's great. It's very hilarious. Spacious.
Yeah, it's very spacious. Well, no, you know, you'd have to be worried about social distancing.
You really don't. I mean, you just by virtue of the fact that nobody lives here, you can social distance until the cows come home. It's fantastic. Mm. But it is very, in comparison to my life in Melbourne, it's clearly, you know, very, very, very different. Yeah. But I've gotten to the point now, I think, where I'm, you know, a bit older and a bit wanted a bit quieter and, you know, need my space a bit more and get grumpier with people and, you know, all the things that old curmudgeonly people do.
Yeah, but Rachel, you can vent on RTI from Slovakia with me on Postcard from Poprad. You can also come on this show. So this is a good place. You can be as grumpy as you like here on Bondi Tunes International. And if you've just joined us, I'm talking with Rachel Brunson, our entertainment reporter in the city of Canberra, in the ACT. It is the capital of Australia. For anyone who remembers the 1970s and everyone thought that Sydney was the capital of Australia. Not so. Now, Rachel.
Yes, not so. Not so.
Talking about entertainment, because it has 2020 was one hell of a year for entertainers, and a lot of people lost a lot of money, not just in the entertainment world, obviously, but in the entertainment world, people doing live bands, that kind of stuff, all went to hell in 2020. And they were doing this stuff on Zoom and doing live concerts on the web, and they're still doing it. You know, it's nearly May. And they're still doing this.
Yes, it's been over 12 months. It's amazing. Because I got a lot of friends in that industry, I also have a lot of friends who are people like, you know, lighting engineers and sound engineers and crew and, you know, stage guys and riggers and all sorts of people, and all of them. And even down to, you know, people who cater events, and they're all absolutely crucified by COVID, and it was really sad. But people are trying to sort of make the best of it. I got a mate who's a sound engineer, and he had a business where he had great big semi trucks full of gear and a huge business, and it folded really quickly. And now he just grows tomatoes and sells them.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because if you're innovative, you can find another way. And it just brings to mind Bali, which is a very popular Indonesian island. It's a bit like the Torremolinos of Australia, where Australians fly to Bali. Small island, Hindu, and very beautiful people. And, of course, tourism was ruining that island anyway. Mm-hmm. The waterways were all flooded with junk. They found another way by what they used to do back in the 60s and 70s was collect seaweed. And I'm not sure what they did with the seaweed, but I think they put it into essential oils and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they've gone back to that. And they did an interview on the ABC here about this. And, you know, it's a good news story in a way. And
well, this is the thing. Necessity is the mother of invention. Mm. And
just like your technician friend.
That's right. And you know, the guy who the kid who used to live with us, who we were boarding while he was learning how to become a pilot. He was in pilot school, and yes, he finally got his commercial pilot's license, and then COVID hit. And when airlines go back up and running at full strength, and when planes are back up in the sky as they should be, the last person they're going to call is him, because they've got Jim Citizen, who is a 50-year-old, you know, commercial pilot, who's had to go and learn how to fix lawnmowers. When they get back to where they were, they're going to ask him to come back first. And Toby and all the students who've just got their licenses will be the very, very last. So he's gone to work for Apple.
And what doing?
He's working at the Apple store. He works as a genius for... you know, 7 days a week.
It's got to be said that, you know, tech companies have made billions of dollars out of this. Furniture companies, people are buying stuff for their home. You know, desks and computers, of course.
Oh, yes.
And software. I mean, they've made a fortune out of this.
They've actually, I realised after a while that this is actually a really good situation for tradespeople to be in, because when nobody could enter your home, people were ordering things from hardware places like, you know, Bunnings, Mitre 10, whoever, and doing DIY around their house, but they had no skills. So when it all came, all was said and done, they'd done it incorrectly and it was all wrong and it needed to be fixed. So when tradies were called back, they were going around fixing everybody's DIY disasters. So they had a roaring trade when they were.
How interesting. Yeah. That is fascinating. But people have tried to do other things, and you got to love them for that. Now, I interviewed a pilot who I know quite well. He's an Irish pilot, and he worked out of UAE, United Arab Emirates, and he was made redundant, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he's much younger than me. I think he must be not even 50, 48 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just made redundant at that age. And it was a stifling thing for him, being so young, with two children.
Yeah.
As I said, he was Irish. So he was living in Abu Dhabi or Dubai or both, sometimes in Sydney, because he was always flying planes. And that all stopped, but he managed to fly back to Ireland, and now he's in Ireland and growing stuff in his garden and taking photos of sunsets.
No, it's like, great, you know. It's isn't that
the only problem is he is young and he's got two children.
Right.
He's got a family, and that is the difficult part of this, because the question is, when this ends, and I hope it does, especially for the international airline industry, will this man, this pilot, very experienced, get a job back, or will they hire newbies?
They won't, because the newbies were going to have to wait their turn anyway. If they do hire newbies and only newbies, it'll only be be as a matter of money. It won't be because they won't have to potentially pay them as much. But, well, that's, you know, true. That in itself is, you know, all kinds of wrong. I don't like to get in a plane where somebody hasn't had several million years under
experience.
Their belt.
Yes.
It makes me nervous. But, you know, the other thing that's really interesting that just occurred to me when we were talking about entertainment is that there are so many American film companies and movie stars and whatnot, particularly in the Byron Bay area right now, because it was the only safe place to make movies. So everybody's coming from America to make these huge blockbuster movies. They made a Thor movie. That's what they've been doing in Byron Bay, making another movie for Marvel. These are all very good things. And Chris Hemsworth, when was on the television this morning talking about they're making a prequel to Mad Max. So he's going to be doing that. You've got Melissa McCarthy, who you know is one of my favorite people on planet Earth.
Yes.
She is currently in Byron Bay, and she's been here for months and months with her family, and they're loving it. They don't want to go back because it's nice and safe.
I did. Yeah, that's an interesting angle on this. I think it was Tom Hanks who was stuck in a hotel at the beginning of this pandemic in Queensland.
Yes, he killed us all.
But just getting to Mad Max, of course, I've just been talking actually with another correspondent, dear listener, about Mad Max and the amount of money it's pumping into the New South Wales economy, because that's another movie that's separate from what's going on in Byron Bay and Chris Hemsworth. And it's, you know, it's a fantastic thing that's happening financially for the state of New South Wales and Australia.
That's right. And, you know, they have, but the people in the entertainment industry have been very clever, and they've been, of course, they've been doing a lot of, they've all sort of turned to the world of podcasting and stuff like that. But I know the, as you know, I'm an insanely huge fan of The West Wing. And
indeed. I must watch it someday.
They've been doing a, I need to decline this call that's coming through. No,
I hope it's not your husband.
No, he rang me before. He's all good. He's tucked away.
Okay.
But yeah, they did a play, and they did a chosen episode of The West Wing. The cast came together and performed it as a play, but filmed it without an audience. And that's how they're spending their time. They're doing these funny reunions.
And
yeah, it is. And it, but they've figured out a way to keep, you know, creativity alive. And And to be fair, like a lot of them are now going back to work, especially on TV shows, not necessarily film, but TV shows are starting to go back to work, but they're just being very careful and following the rules about how they do it. And that's all you can do. It's if you notice, if you take your time to watch something like, you know, The Bold and the Beautiful or something like that, you'll notice because there's a lot of rolling around in the sheets there, and there's a lot of everybody kissing everybody. Nobody's touching anybody in that show right now. They're all standing at least 1.5 metres apart. They're doing their own hair and makeup. They've got their own wardrobe that they bring from home. Yep. And that's how they're getting it done, so they could get back to work.
But the point is they're getting it done.
Yep, they're getting it done.
Rach, we're coming to the end of awards season. Did it actually happen?
It did and it didn't. It was harder for, I mean, they had to do it all by Zoom and all these funny, you know, like the broadcast of the Golden Globes, like the Emmy, they haven't done the Emmys yet, but like they did, you know, it was, you saw them, it was very odd and peculiar, and it didn't have the same thing. And some people were watching, waiting for their award or whatever from their lounge room, you know, in their trackies. It was odd.
Especially, in fact, an Australian, and you know, because our time zone is so different from America. I can't remember who it was. I didn't really watch much of this, but they had to cross to Australia for some reason. It was probably Nicole or someone. I don't know, because I didn't watch it. I just saw the fact that they had to cross to Australia, and that's why you're talking about, you know, people in their pajamas in some parts of the world.
That's right. It's been a kind of a weird feeling. But I think the thing that people, and some people will sort of argue that, you know, it's a waste of, you know, it's a waste of time, and we shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be, you know, celebrating these things, and we shouldn't be doing this. It's the perfect time to do it. It's the perfect time to be celebrating, and and celebrating your industry and giving each other a royal pat on the back. It's the perfect time to keep things as normal as possible, especially when you consider what horror is going on, especially like where these where all these shows are made.
In the United States. Texas, I mean,
they're in a terrible situation over there, and I mean, it was not as it's not as bleak as it was when the giant Cheeto was in charge, but still, you know, they're still weathering a fairly large storm there, and they're not going to get anybody traveling to their country anytime soon.
No, and they can't.
No, and we can't go until we all get vaccinated. And by the way, that's rolling out. Not that I want to sort of delve into that too much, but by the way, that's rolling out. It's not nobody's going to be completely vaccinated until maybe sort of this time next year. And even so, like, will the variant strain stop us from traveling anyway? So who knows?
It's a whole new world, isn't it? I mean, you know, they're now calling. They're saying it's the new reality, I think.
Yeah.
And it is, it doesn't go back to reality that we knew before February last year in 2020. It is a new reality, and it's never going to be the same. But the entertainment industry intrigues me with everything you've just said. And I would like to point out to our listeners that you've mentioned technicians, you've mentioned people behind the scenes. A lot of viewers, whether it's on television or in the cinema, which they couldn't go to for a year, they just think about the actors. They don't understand there's a massive crew behind all this who are not employed because of
Well, that's
COVID.
Exactly right. You know, for every sort of multi-million dollar Tom Cruise, there's a guy who's, you know, who makes sure that everybody gets their, you know, their coffee when they feel like it. And there's a guy that, you know, will walk around after everybody, after all the million-dollar Tom Cruises have left the building to, you know, clean up. And there's, you know, a thousand, these are industries. These are huge corporations who employ millions of people. And if you can do something to keep those people in work, it's not about the actor who's already got plenty of money and doesn't have to worry about it.
Good point.
It's about the little guys who don't have all the money and still have to work. And just because their job happens to be under the banner of a film production company, it doesn't mean that it's less important than anybody else.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the entertainment industry has been so rocked by this. And as you say, people have come across new ideas, new, very innovative ways. I just hope that they're making money out of it. I watch reality TV shows. I watch, you know, shows like Graham Norton and, you know, all those shows that air on the BBC. And those type of shows, late night talk show hosts, are all so separated from the people they're interviewing. It's really odd to watch. It's really bizarre.
It is odd to watch. I love Stephen Colbert. And
well, yes, we both love him.
He's great. He's still great, even though he doesn't. But he's sitting there in his, you know, in his casual clothes. He's not wearing his suit. He's not bothered by it, but they do all their interviews by Zoom and you know, that's how they make it work. It's just, but you know, it's for every page that turns, there's an interesting story on the other side of it. And Matt Hetherington, who you know he was doing acting lessons online and coaching people for singing online, and he also started life coaching people online just to make a living. And that's because his bread and butter is doing mostly these days, but now that he's back in Australia, is corporate events where he will do, you know, one a month, and he will get paid a lot of money for that. But he only does one a month. So and when that disappeared, what's he supposed to do? He's got kids. He's got a house. He has to pay his bills. But he left New York when this broke out because he was living in New York at the time, and he wasn't able to stay. The Australian government said, if you're overseas, come home. So he did, and he's been stuck here ever since. And that's how he's making a living. You've got to use what the good Lord gave you.
Do you think, as an Australian person, that he was kind of lucky to get home?
I absolutely believe he was, and he was going to come home anyway. When all the restaurants started closing down and all the sidewalk cafes started closing down and, the numbers started to creep up a little, he got concerned and thought, no, I can't be here. I don't think I better try and get home. And then they made the call and he said, well, that's good that I already decided to do that because I would not want to be stuck in, and particularly New York. I mean, New York really got pulverized.
And that was more towards the start of the pandemic. I'm not sure how it is now because the governor of New York is in deep doo-doo.
Yes.
For I don't know, sexual harassment of women?
I know.
Women.
He's our Chris Cuomo's brother. I don't know.
I know, and we love Chris Cuomo on CNN. Yes.
We do.
Monday Tunes International, virus free.
Around the world and down your street. Rachel Brunson.
Before we go, and thank you for spending so much time with me, and it's Rachel Brunson on the line from Canberra here on Bondi Tunes International. I'm Henry in Sydney. I don't know if you're familiar with a very popular Tonight Show talk host, James Corden.
Oh, of course, everybody knows. And if you don't know who he is, you need to have a word with yourself.
I think so. Now, we're talking about entertainment, and what intrigues me about his show is that he has now turned his entire crew, I don't know if you've seen this, he's on CBS very late night in America, and like he starts at 12:30, just, you know, 30 minutes after midnight, but he's got this huge following. And what he's done is, because of the whole COVID thing, he's changed the whole structure of his show. He sometimes interviews people, but he just has a chat in his very British way with all his, the cameraman, and they're all becoming really famous, the drummers, the band, the engineers, the producer. He says, can I let this go to air? Because the producer is sitting there. He's going, I don't, and James is going, you know, I think maybe I went over the line. Is this, because it's not live.
No.
He says, are you going to let this go to air? My point to this is that it's become hugely successful. This kind of style of show where the background people are becoming famous.
Yes.
And I think that's a lovely thing.
I do too. And these are people that, James Corden wields a big stick in Hollywood now, and he's very, very, very powerful man. And he can basically call them as he sees them. He doesn't have to do that show anymore, but he loves doing it, so he does.
He just goes on greatly successful movies like Cats.
Yeah. Oh, no, that wasn't a greatly successful movie. I know. Movie anyway.
I'm joking.
I was going to say, I'm appalled that you said that. I didn't even realize you were joking. But now that I know you're joking, I'm very relieved. My heart skipped a beat. But, you know, the fact that somebody like that chooses to do what he's doing in the format that he's doing it and featuring the people that he is speaks a lot to his character and a lot to what you can do for the power of good when you have a lot of power.
Yes, and he's always pushing the buttons of CBS because he goes out right across America, albeit at 12:30 midnight. He's got a huge following on that show alone, and you mentioned that he didn't really need that show. And it's worth bearing in mind that he interviewed, as you will know, Princess Harry. Where did I go with that? Prince Harry on the top of a bus in Los Angeles.
That's
do you remember that?
I do, and that was because
what a scoop.
Well, he normally does this really cool thing, as you would know, called carpool karaoke, which became humongous. And because he couldn't get in a car with people, he was trying to figure out other places to have a chat with them. So he'd pick something where they could be outside and socially distancing.
What
better than the top of a bus?
What a brilliant idea. And here's another thing about this, talking of Prince Harry. He got Prince Harry before Oprah did.
Yeah.
And that was a huge story. I mean, to me, that was almost as big as the Oprah interview, you know, with Meghan and Harry.
Oh, dear. Yes, the interview. Oh, dear. I've got so many things to say about that, but I won't. And that's the other thing. Like he's fairly relaxed guy, and spending an afternoon with James Corden wouldn't be the worst thing in the universe, to be honest. I mean, I could think of much horrible and have done them. ways to spend an afternoon.
It is fair to say, yes, indeed. Wouldn't you love to do that? I mean, wouldn't you love to just hang out with Harry? Especially since, and I noticed on the top of that bus, and I'm sure you've seen the whole of this, the actual drinks tray plunges into Harry.
It was the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
I have to ask if that was staged or not.
It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell with James. I mean, you don't know.
You don't know. And the other thing too is that, you know, a lot of people would be, you know, that genuinely uptight that they wouldn't allow, you know, a mishap like that to be comedy, because then they're going to be on, you know, YouTube for at least a week with that particular clip. But Harry sort of, you know, if he's casual enough to either let it happen or set it up, then either way, it just doesn't matter. It was good television.
It was brilliant television, and James Corden is very, he does plan all this, well, his producers and him plan all this very well, and you can tell that it's planned if you're in the industry like you as an actor or me as a broadcaster. You know what's going on in the background, that this has all been planned. And I just still wonder, when that bus turned the corner, if that trolley actually was planned to go into Prince Harry.
I honestly can't tell.
We'll never know. We'll never know.
But it was, and that's the thing, it's like moments like that when they're staged, I always get a bit cynical and sort of, you know, have a couple of words about stuff like that. But I didn't care in this particular case.
It doesn't matter. That's the point. Yeah. It actually doesn't matter.
It was silly. It was great.
And, you know, I noticed, because I'm a geek for radio and television, I noticed that, you know, they're casually on this bus, the top of a bus, overhead bus, doing all this banter, that there are actually, and I looked very carefully on a video because I'm a geek, and I noticed there's four police motorbikes following them.
Of course.
Because of security.
Yeah, you know? You can't just let Harry get on a bus and wander around downtown Los Angeles. It's too dangerous. You have to. I don't think he'd be terribly bothered. Because, I mean, he's clearly...
Oh, he probably
They know who he is in America,
stuff.
But I don't think he'd be as bothered as he would in, you know, in the UK. I don't think he'd be as you know, set upon as you might be by people in the UK, but because I don't think Americans really care. But it was so funny to see him being all cash and, you know, just having a chat, and then, you know, behind,
and when they
you've
do
got
the army,
law enforcement.
The army?
Okay, no worries. I've got to remember you who you are.
Look, I know I just love James Corden, and that's why I just keep mentioning him. But James Corden is, you know, he's not a skinny bloke, okay?
No.
And he does all these skits with people, like doing that range army thing where you have to jump under things and over things. He did that with Prince Harry, because, of course, Harry was an officer in the army. And I just thought it's actually really cool that James Corden doesn't mind showing the fact that he's a little bit overweight or whatever.
He's very comfortable in his own skin, and that's what makes him endearing. It's great to see a guy who's just like everybody else, but is so gifted and so funny. There's a movie you have to find and watch. I only saw it in the movies beginning of this year, so it might not be available to everybody yet, unless you do something nefarious. But
not that I would do that, Rachel.
Of course,
Branson.
Not. That's illegal, no. And you're robbing people who are already suffering in a crippled
right.
industry. But there's a movie called Super Intelligence, and it's him and Melissa McCarthy. And as you know, she does no wrong in my eyes. And
I'm just typing that in. I'm not actually trying to look for it. Don't worry.
We don't see him. He's the voice of this artificial intelligence, and at some point she's a fan of James Corden. She says, I'm a huge fan of James Corden, and he starts talking to her, and she thinks it's James Corden, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's an artificial intelligence who's decided that to make her happy he'll sound like James Corden, so she's not nervous. But he is just brilliant during this whole film, and you don't see him. You never see him.
Technology. It's always watching us, studying our every move, and it just focused its attention on Carol Peters.
Thanks so much for being here, Carol.
What is this?
Let's jump right into it.
I don't like this. Why is it doing that? I'm going to find out who you are, okay?
Carol, I am a technological superintelligence. I can control every dollar and every machine on the planet.
I know that voice. Is this James Corden?
I'm not James Corden, Carol. My analysis showed that hearing James Corden's voice would calm you. You sent an email to James Corden claiming to be the president of Corden's Wardens.
That was a tough night for me. Oh, boy.
I plan on spending these next 3 days hanging out with you.
Why you?
You're literally the most average person on Earth.
Oh! Ooh, you okay?
Yep.
Just really engage your core. Oh, that was worse, huh?
What would you do if I told you the world was going to end in 3 days?
Try to make things right with George.
Carol, you look amazing.
Weirdly overdressed. Your body. I'm just getting a little bit panicky because I can't access my own hands.
What does the AI want?
My intention is to solidify my theory about humanity. If things don't go well, I'll destroy the planet. Just blow it up.
Did you say blow up? Like B?
Like B? Like Boba or Burt Bacharach?
Yes, BBB.
Oh my God!
Back off, lady.
I'm gonna show you that people are worth saving.
Humans are more complex than I thought.
We're all counting on you. If there's any indication that it's aware of what we're doing, click this might save the world.
Don't click it now.
Wasn't going to click it now.
Okay.
Why would I click it now? You just said...
So it looks like a pen. People click pens nervously.
Okay, are we done?
This is nice. These are nice people. It's not like a Russian mob.
A nice change of pace.
I mean, I guess on the other hand, this thing could destroy the Earth.
You ain't wrong.
No. It's too bad.
He's so brilliant. It's just the way his turn of phrase and the way he says things, and just that funny little, you know, British inflection that he has on every second word, and it's hilarious.
And I just want to get back to the fact that he's doing this show with all his engineers and producers and everyone in the band, and that's a fantastic thing. I just want to mention Eric Idle.
Oh, yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but you say Eric Idle to me and I just go, oh, yes.
He went on The Late Late Show, which is what it's called. If you're listening in Ireland, don't be confused with the Irish version of The Late Late Show. This is broadcast in Los Angeles with Eric Idle, and he did the We're All Going to Die song.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to look it up on the YouTubes after I talk to you.
Please do.
I'm
not sure what you should... Just look up, if you put James, and also for our listeners, just put James Corden in and Eric Idle and The Late Late Show, and it will come up. And by the way, we're just going to play that audio now.
You know, all I ever want to do with this show is bring joy to you, our audience, and brighten people's days, but... it's really hard to do comedy lately. It is, because nothing's funny. You know, everything in the world just seems so bad and heavy all the time, and I struggle. I struggle with what to say sometimes. And honestly, I feel like I can't do it today.
James.
What are you doing
well,
here?
Well, James, I heard you were struggling to stay positive, and I thought I could stop by to cheer you up a bit.
Cheer me up? How exactly are you planning to cheer me up?
Well, I thought maybe we could sing a song together.
Hang on. If I'm hearing this right, are you saying you're stopping by to manufacture... a spontaneous seeming moment of fun that we've been emailing back and forth about for weeks?
Well, yes, I am, buddy, yeah. The news is full of dread. It can leave you seeing red, and often it's enough to make you blue. But when things get too depressing, don't grumble, count your blessings. Repeat this little line to get you through. Hind,
Always look on the bright side of life.
Sorry, that's me. That's my... Sorry, guys, it's a news update. It just says that the shift in climate change is going to make hurricanes a lot worse from now on.
Oh, jeez.
Well, let's ignore that. You know, that's bad news. We're here for good cheer. Let's start the music again, please. And always look on the bright side of... Oh, is that you? Is that...
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I leave it on in case of emergency.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not an emergency. It's just a news alert.
Right.
It says Britain will not be taking another vote. They're still leaving Europe.
Oh, well, you know... Good thing we got a reminder of that.
The only thing we need a reminder of right now is that life is beautiful.
Yes.
And wonderful. And full of brightness. Which brings me back to... And always look on the bright...
Oh, are you kidding me? Is this a... Oh, come on.
Hold on.
What is... It's Trump's tweeting again. It's... What? What?
We are probably all going to die. We are definitely all going to die.
The president is cruel and stubborn as a mule. I'm sure America's enemies are thrilled.
Medicare is through.
The ocean's rising too.
A million different things could get us killed.
I mean, there's got to be something we can do, isn't there? I mean, the Republicans, they can stop Trump, right?
They won't. We're screwed.
Well, then the Democrats need to take back the House and the Senate.
They won't. We're screwed.
But no, they will. If everybody goes and votes this November...
Oh, sure, as long as the younger generation turns out and actually votes this time...
They won't. We're screwed.
We are probably all going to die. We are definitely all going to die.
The planet's getting wrecked.
There's one good side effect. We'll stop discussing Trump on every show.
Goodbye to all our strife, cause in the afterlife
we'll be tap dancing with Elvis and Van Gogh. We are probably all going to die. Yes, we are definitely all going to die. So have a drink or ten, you won't regret it when the Reaper comes a-knocking at our door.
Why even clean your sheets when one of Trump's dumb tweets could get us all embroiled in nuclear war? You feel stressed about what's coming next. You shouldn't feel upset, you should feel swell.
We'll be dead anyhow.
Why not just end it now?
Yeah. No, wait, I've got a book I've got to sell. What's wrong with my game here? Always look on the bright side of life, a short biography, available in stores and online now, makes a wonderful Christmas gift.
Right. I mean, you put it like that, yeah, I mean... Christmas is coming up and Thanksgiving, and don't want to miss that.
No, and my wife's birthday is coming soon, that'll be nice.
And some good friends of mine are having a baby.
Oh.
Should be lovely. Mm. And do you know how many newborn babies are being born every day? Do you know how many advances in science and medicine are making the world better and better? I've been spending so much time focusing on all this bad news, I've completely forgotten that the world is worth fighting for. because ultimately the world is full of good.
Speaking of forgetting things, I just remembered that my wife's birthday was actually last week.
Oh.
Can I crash with you for a couple of days?
Sure.
Okay.
You haven't heard it yet, but our listeners have. I just love his style. Was he in the History Boys when he was very young, or have I got that totally wrong?
Who, James Corden? I don't know. I know that he won a Tony Award for his the show that he wrote himself, but I don't know that.
I may have got that wrong, and I can hear listeners screaming at me, but whatever.
Write your letters to someone else at P.O. Yes. Box.
I promise I'm going to let you go soon.
Okay, but
I just love talking to you, and it's so rare that we're talking these days, apart from when we're on Postcard from Pop Rad.
That's right.
You said that, you know, where would you go with the Harry? And I know this is old news now, the Meghan and Harry interview with Oprah. But I just want to cover it with you because I know you have a very interesting angle on these things. You sounded like you weren't overly happy with that interview. And also how Good Morning Britain's presenter.
Piers Morgan.
Yeah.
He's obnoxious.
What are your thoughts? Because I know this has happened a month or more ago. What are your thoughts on how this played out? How, you know, I think CBS bought this from Oprah's operation, and of course it was broadcast around the world, but firstly on, you know, CBS.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on the whole production of that from, I guess, a broadcasting angle? And do you think they did a good thing?
I think they did a money thing. And I think that had I been in the same situation, if I was in charge, I probably would have said, yep, let's grab that. That's huge. That's massive. That will create a lot of revenue. That will, you know, there's really good money reasons to get involved in something like that. I had no particular problem with Meghan and Harry when they decided they were going to bail and go. I thought, well, you know, go live your life, that's fine, do whatever you think you got to do. I didn't have strong feelings for or against them. Not my place to judge. I don't live in their shoes. But after that interview, I just went off them a bit. Like, I thought, you know what, that was unnecessary. I don't think you needed to do that on television. And then, of course, making it super awkward for everyone, when Prince Philip dies, he's got to shoot back home and be amongst all those people that he's allowed this woman to publicly diss. And he himself
and that,
also...
And that's happened, of course.
Yeah, yes. And I just think that it was... the whole thing felt unseemly.
Do you think it felt contrived? I mean,
It was totally contrived. It really was. I mean, that was she knew.
But
exactly.
Why would they need the money? I mean, really?
They wouldn't need the money. And
haven't they just done a massive deal with, I don't know who? Apple, I think.
They didn't need the money. This was a vanity exercise, and
it was kind of a bitching exercise as well.
I thought it was, and I've never had a problem with her. It's no problem. But now I'm thinking it all felt very mean spirited to me, and that's not okay to do. Who wants to air that much dirty laundry out?
I guess you have to ask the question, why they did it. If it's not for money, or if it's just Meghan having a problem with the British royal family, you know, I'm probably overdoing this because it's so late in the day talking to you about it, but surely if she was marrying a prince in Britain, that she would be part of a family. Like, it's a bit like pissing off your in-laws.
Well, Prince Charles walked her down the aisle because she's estranged from her own father. So, you know, what?
Yeah. How,
and I mean, sure, people might have, she might not have been prepared for the, and I don't think, to be fair to her, I don't think you can be prepared for a life with somebody like that, but you don't know until you're right in it. And the comments that she made and the complaints that she had were no different than the ones that Diana had when she did her interview, and no different from what Sarah Ferguson had to say about
the telling thing, isn't
the,
it?
The yes. firm and everything else. I think if you're an outsider, it's hard. But by contrast, Kate Middleton's done it. So, you know, I don't know whether it's a personality thing or
yes,
what, but I just,
well, it might be a cultural thing given that Kate Middleton is British.
I think so, but I just and I also felt like it was a diss on the Queen, and that's never okay to do. So, you know,
yeah.
Just
looking at Prince Philip's funeral, how sad was the picture of the Queen sitting by herself?
It was heartbreaking.
It really was.
You know, she looks like the loneliest woman on earth, and it's sad to look to watch. I mean, clearly it was going to happen one way or another.
Well, it was inevitable. Right. Of course, he was 99, but
exactly.
Something that I think you'd be interested in is there characters, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
She was quite conservative and he was a larrikin.
Mm-hmm.
And people say opposites attract, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a perfect case of opposites attract. She actually laughed at him, you know, a lot.
Yeah.
She just thought he was a bit crazy. And I think he, what do you call her? The footman outside Buckingham Palace?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
He dressed up as one day and there's a picture of her.
Yes, I saw that.
And she's just laughing her head off because that's what kept her going. And this is why I think this is very sad, because it's they're married for 70 years.
I know. And, you know, her whole life she spent with this man, and it's horribly, horribly sad. And I don't think the thing that made it worse watching that funeral was COVID, because had COVID not been a thing, she would have been able to sit with all her family. She can't sit with anybody because she's 8 million years old and she's the monarch. So she has to be separated from everybody else. She can't risk getting COVID. And they have an example to set to everybody about maintaining social distance.
Oh, that's a very important point for all the royal lovers in Britain.
Yep.
If anyone's going to give you an example, it should be royalty.
Absolutely, 100%. So I think that made it look worse. I think if she'd been able to sit with Charles and Anne, and I think if she'd been able to sit next to them or with them, it wouldn't have looked so desolate all around her. And
that picture just went viral. I mean, everything went viral about that funeral, but that picture totally went viral.
It's haunting.
It is haunting, absolutely. And now her birthday is coming up soon.
Yes.
I do believe. I think her actual birthday is in June, even though we have different birthdays,
no,
different
her
dates
for her birthday's in April, but the June her celebration is here in June, where we all get an extra Monday off.
That's right, and a lot of people don't even care about the fact that it's the Queen's birthday, but we are a Commonwealth state.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, it's so lovely to talk to you. I'll send you this interview because you haven't heard that piece from James Corden that he
no,
did with Eric
Idle. I'm going to get on the YouTubes now and have a look.
Okay, well, look, thank you so much for spending so much time talking with me.
It's okay, any time you like. I've got nothing else to do. I don't have any friends.
She lies, I tell you, she lies. That's Rachel Brunson, our entertainment reporter in Canberra. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Henry O'Donovan.